Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Hey, welcome to our show. An episode, hold on, here it comes, 490. Woo! A whole lot of chatting going on as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her body composition. Oh, this is, you know, it's one of my absolute all-time favorite topics. Stop staring at your weight and look under the hood and find out what the quality of your body is all about. Oh, you're going to love this one because we have some cutting edge science we're going to be sharing. It's going to be such a special show. Now, before we begin, just know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs. Rooted in nature, you know, they've got a special gift for women, the award-winning Her Life Stages products that really provide support for women throughout their entire journey from their menstrual years, including PMS, all the way through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. So this is an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about her life stages, run on over to your local health food store or run on over to Sprouts, Whole Foods, Amazon, or check it out at Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y.com. If you go to the website, use the promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. All right, you'll be glad you did. Now, here's your first reminder to click on iTunes to rate and review today's show because we just sit around waiting to hear from you. That's what we do. We love, love, love your feedback. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
Let's talk body composition. I love this topic. I've been like a nutcase about this forever. As you know, I wrote the chapter in the Lifestyle Medicine textbook on a woman's body composition from womb to tomb, you know, all the way throughout her life. It was kind of eye-opening for me to really kind of review all of that. And I've been on it ever since, including my current book that I am writing as we speak. And then I run across somebody who's really on top of it as well, Nina Crowley. Now, Nina has a PhD and an RD. All right, so she covers everything. Oh my gosh, she's already on top of it. And she's looking at patient-centered care and accessibility and obesity care. Now, she's got a PhD in health psychology, an MS in healthcare policy and management, and a BS in nutrition science. So with that kind of a combo, all I can tell you is that she's totally, completely, absolutely rocking it. She was a director for the Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery Program at the Medical University of South Carolina and is now director of clinical education and partnerships for SECA, S-E-C-A's Medical Body Composition and Bioimpedance Analysis Division. That's a whole mouthful, Nina. Welcome aboard to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your intro and your energy, so I can't wait for our conversation.
That's because I just got through working out, and you know, I've got that whole glow about me, you know, and all those, you know, wonderful chemicals are like circulating in my body, and I'm just feeling like my endorphins are like, woohoo, let's have some fun. All right, so let's talk about it. Why is body composition so important?
I'm really glad to talk about this. This has definitely been my passion area. And as you announced, I do have a background in psychology, nutrition, and working with people with obesity for the past 20 years. And so it's always been a passion of mine to look at the patient-centered care. At the center of that is somebody who's probably struggled with their weight, their feelings about weight, and a lot of that behavioral, emotional, ethical stuff around their body size for so long. So I'm with you looking at just the weight on the scale is not it. I love how you said looking under the hood. That's kind of what I feel like body composition is. It's really, it's looking at the deeper perspective of the individual. You know, we can't really get a good sense of what someone's health is by just looking at their relationship with their gravity on the scale, right? But it's a, you know, it's a screening marker and it does give us a little piece of info. So once we have that, we really do want to get deeper into, you know, what's the body made up of? How much is muscle? How much is fat? We've got impact of water and bone and all these other components. And so in particular for women, we're talking about a lot of changes across our lifestyle and how our body fat changes, where our body fat is located, and what's going on with muscle health. So that's been a really big focus of mine. I've been, you know, fortunate to be able to work specifically in this field now, moved over to working with Sika 2.5 years ago, and we make body composition equipment and work with healthcare providers so that they're able to show their patients these deeper insights.
You know, it's interesting. Years ago, when I was a Pew Foundation scholar in nutrition and metabolism at the University of California, making me kind of a unicorn, maybe a freak, I don't know, as a physician who actually got some formal training in nutrition, I remember the day that Stephen Finney, one of the great names in nutrition science, walked over to me and he said, "Hey, Pam, we're going to be, you know, playing around with a little body composition. Can we use you as a little experimental person?" And I said, "Well, sure. What the heck?" I'd never seen my body. It's like I didn't know what was under the hood. You know, I'm tall, I'm muscular, and I've always been fairly athletic. But honestly, and you know, I mean, just a total body weight was all I ever had. And so I was fascinated with this. And only to find out that when we had done this, and this is using high-level university equipment, I found out, my Lord, my muscle mass was ridiculously high for a woman. And he just looked at me, he said, "You know, you're a genetic freak." But, you know, I look at my family and I know it's genetic because I come from a line of, on my father's side, of athletes, and they're all kind of sturdy athletes, you know, wrestlers. And I was now all of a sudden, all I cared about was looking at my muscle mass, right? And then I was kind of fascinated with fat mass too. I didn't know what my body fat was. And that was interesting. And you know, the least I cared about was a total body weight. I was like, "Well, whatever." And I kind of pushed that to the side. And I was like, "Whoa, I'm looking under the hood, the carburetor, the engine. What is going on here? This is kind of cool stuff." And I've been on top of it ever since then. And I really think that that's a much healthier way to look at your body, especially as a woman who's, most women, I've been working with women for decades, have been tortured and tormented by the body weight scale. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, I've done a whole series on kind of the psychology of weighing because that's such an important thing to me. I didn't think moving into this role that I'd really be able to use psychology as much as I have. I thought, you know, it would be a lot more technical talking about body composition and the science or the, you know, physics of all of that. But there's actually so much involved with having the conversations with people just to open up about body composition as an alternative or an addition to looking at weight. But there are so many things that people have tortured themselves about with weight that I feel like body composition numbers are such a different angle to that. Like we can really look at when things are changing, we can trend them over time. And it also helps open up this sort of normalizing conversation about how things can and should change as we're going through the different stages as a woman through our life cycle. So instead of just hanging it up on weight and saying, "Oh yeah, you're going to gain weight at this time point." I mean, that's a really kind of a simplified and not very helpful thing to hear. But if we say, you know, there's reasons why things are shifting, there's things you can do about that at each phase. And then we're going to try, experiment, and do some different things and see how that has an impact on those numbers. That's what I think is so special. And like you said, looking at DEXA is a way to look at your bone density and your lean soft tissue. But we even now, what we use as our technology, bioimpedance, actually validates our skeletal muscle mass with MRI data. And that's the best we have right now for looking at the actual skeletal muscle. And that's the stuff that we really want to hang on to, especially as we age and especially as people are trying to lose weight or change their body composition. You want to look at what's happening with that muscle mass. And so that is the best way to do that. We're not going to put everybody on an MRI, but our device is validated, you know, 97% when you're looking at correlation with MRI. And that's really good. And it's a tool that you can use sort of in a clinical setting to look at changes. As you heard, my background's with obesity, there's so much more, you know, so many more options that people have from a treatment perspective, from nutrition and behavior to medication to surgery. And in all of those type of programs, we're really hearing more and more that with significant weight loss, we want to protect and preserve that muscle mass. And so this is a way to look at that in context with these other things, you know, hormone replacement or perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, aging, sarcopenia, all these different things that we experience as, you know, we're aging through that timeline, and we can look at that and be more critical and then target our treatments a little bit better.
So a woman comes in and she gets her body comp done. Her doctor has the appropriate equipment. What is she supposed to expect? When it comes to weight, they have all these, you know, crazy charts and back and forth. And we all know that the original weight charts were, you know, bogus because they were based upon white males who were able to have life insurance. Women did not. And then, of course, they inferred, you know, extrapolated from men's weight to women's weight. I want to slap the people who even tried doing that decades ago. But that's how they tortured us with all of that information. Obviously, it doesn't have any ethnic or diversification data. So I won't even get into that. Okay, rant over. So a woman comes in, like, how many pounds of muscle should a woman be expected to have? Now, this is a loaded question, I already know. So I'm going to ask you to kind of dive into this. I'm going to give you a classic woman. Now, today's woman, the average woman today is about 5'3" to 5'4" and weighs almost 180 pounds. That's an average woman. Her waist circumference on average is approaching 38 inches. That is your average woman. So she's walking in and she's saying, hey, I would love to know what my body comp is. And I want to know, like, what am I supposed to do with these numbers? So go for it.
All right. Oh, gosh, I have so many things. So first, I wanted to say, you know, I appreciate you kind of highlighting the differences of men and women and ethnicity. So that is actually something that's really important to look at. And there are body composition devices out there that really just give you a number that don't have the differences with ethnicity, age, gender, and even with weight. So those are some factors that we have in our validation studies when you're looking at the way that it's stratified. So we can give somebody sort of what, where they compare or kind of stack up to their reference group. And for us, the reference group includes age, gender, BMI, and ethnicity, because there's such a range of what people's should, you know, what they should be. And we want to compare them to people that are more like them to give that more individualized feedback on where they need to be.
So what about the numbers? Okay, so she just did her little, you know, thing and the numbers spit out. What are you expecting to see? And if she's your average woman out there?
Your good news is that I couldn't tell you because it would be so specific. So these are kind of formulas that are, you know, baked into the bioimpedance formulas, which form, you know, we don't have direct measurement other than autopsy for body composition. We have these gold standard, or we don't even like that term really, but these sort of reference methods, the four compartment model for fat and the MRI for muscle mass. And we do our bioimpedance measurement validated to those, but it relies on some formulas. And to make those formulas better, we input things like age, gender, weight, and ethnicity. So we don't have a set number for some of these metrics. So there are some things that we have criteria.
How about ranges? I mean, the reason why I'm asking, this is important because the grand majority of women don't understand what those numbers look like. So I'm going to be brave and I'm going to put it out there, right? So if that woman came in and she's your classic woman, who's been bouncing around with her weight for years. And this is kind of where she is now. So, you know, just like I had said, maybe like 5'4", 179, I don't know, whatever the hell. And now she's getting measured. Now she's going to see that the total, and to your point, everyone's individualized. It all depends upon your genetics, what you've already been doing to your body comp over time, you know, yo-yo dieting, all the rest of it, really does have major consequences on body composition. Let's just say she rolls in, her total lean body mass is 100 pounds. And now she's got 176 pounds minus 100, so that leaves 76 pounds. And roughly about 6 to 7 pounds of that ish will be bone. And then the rest of it's going to be fat. So what do you say? So there she is. She's going, wow, is 100 pounds good? What am I supposed to expect? Because I'm actually on a very healthy program now. I just started a month ago and I'm doing a lot more exercise and I'm really trying to be vigilant about eating healthfully, not nutty, but healthfully. But should this muscle mass change as I change?
So what we're going to look at, the way that the reports kind of are structured, are they're going to show you different things. They're going to show you where you stack up. So for body fat, for example, we don't have a real national number that says, hey, this is what your range should be. We have some guidelines. So from the Obesity Medicine Association, for a woman, they would say if your body fat percentage, and that would be your pounds of fat divided by your total pounds. So for you, I can't do the math, but 80 over 100, right? That's what, 40%? So that would be above the threshold that they're saying for women, 35%. So that would be considered obesity. So we would tell that person, hey, this is where you land. Your body fat percentage is over the threshold here. The way we're going to show it is where that lands for that person's age, gender, BMI, and hey, you're at the upper range of the percentiles, right? Then we would look at, first, before we get to lean body mass, we're going to look at fat-free mass. So fat mass and fat-free mass would add up to your weight. So that would be that 100 pounds you're talking about, right? And from that fat-free mass, we don't have a number. And it's a good thing that we don't have a set number, right? Because that doesn't take into account everybody's individuality. But we would look at that. There are some ways you can look at fat-free mass that are like a criterion or a threshold. If it's under a certain number, this could be malnutrition or sarcopenia for fat-free mass. Then we would look at, hey, if they had DEXA, that would be bone density, right? And then you would subtract, and that third number would be lean body mass. Our device actually, as I mentioned, because it's MRI validated, we would actually get deeper into that and say, what is the muscle mass? And muscle mass is about half of fat-free mass on average, you know, kind of give or take a little. So we would look at that number, and your standard patient would be, maybe, let's just say 50 for an even number. That person maybe has 50 pounds of muscle mass for that 180-pound frame. We would look at that in that range. And the interesting thing, I know that your brain and mine want there to be a number, a range, a here's what's good and here's where you're at. But I do like that we don't have those stuck in people's heads, because I think it can be the same as what weight has done. I've got to get to this number. Anything other than this number is problematic. And so what I like is showing someone on a range where they are now, and most importantly, where they're trending once we start doing something different. So that's where we would see, you know, hey, this is where the muscle mass is going to move. And then we can think about, you know, they're in that lean body mass or in that fat-free mass that we're talking about. There's other factors like the water that someone's, you know, there's more water in muscle than fat. And so these numbers are a little bit hard to tease out, because we kind of want like all four things to add up to a equal number. But again, I think it's helpful to look at how these things compare to where they're at in their own kind of lifespan, and then where they move to. So we can kind of move them along that spectrum as they change their diet or their exercise or anything like that.
So if I can kind of interpret what you're saying for our wonderful Her podcast masses out there, going into body composition is an extremely individualized journey. The total amount of fat you have on your body, the total amount of muscle, your bone density, as it were. This is very, very important information, because you need to optimize each one of these compartments in order to get the best chance of a healthy lifespan, a nice, long, healthy lifespan where you're functional and all the rest of it. So let's just say what's important here is that how you're taking care of yourself is going to dictate what that body composition is going to be looking like and trending over time. That's what it's going to look like. So for instance, you know, you're a woman and you go, hey, I'm picking up CrossFit, bring it on. And all of a sudden, if genetics allows you to, and that's very important, I don't see a lot of Somalis who are powerlifters, okay? I mean, the genetics just don't work that way. So it's really important to consider that you may have limits and boundaries with a lot of this stuff. But let's just say for grins, you're going out there, you're doing some kind of CrossFit stuff, and you just decided to have some fun, or you wanted to take up a lot more weightlifting and whatever. So wherever you are today, one would imagine you're going to, at the very least, maintain your muscle mass, if not build more muscle mass. And the rapidity with which you build lean body mass or muscle mass is highly dependent upon both genetics, gender, and age. When you're 60, you're going to be piling it on a little bit differently than when you were 20. And that's important to keep in mind. So you got to put all that together. And then when it comes to fat, fat is an interesting one. Well, let's go to muscle for a second. Why do you even care about muscle? Because girlfriends out there in the seventh decade of life, as Nina had said, she used that word sarcopenia. You've heard me say that before. So whether you're a master's athlete or you're just a wonderful woman out there in womanland, by the time you hit your 60s, there will be an age-related drop in muscle mass. Now, if you're already pretty high, then it's like, so what, right? It's not going to, you know, like put you in a horrible place where you're going to be frail. But this is why you want to kind of stockpile your muscle and prevent issues like that and stay strong all the way through your 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. So muscle mass is super important for you to just be aware of and track over time with your body comp thing. And as far as comparing to your best friend or something, she's who she is, and you are who you are. And you got to just, it's just a very different thing. Let's say you both whip out a dress. You're both going to look different in exactly the same dress. And that's just the way it works. So I think that this is one of the reasons why I love body comp so much, is it takes you to your unique, all about me journey, and you stop comparing yourself to other people, and you pay attention to the quality and quantity of your body. It heightens all of that. And when it comes to fat, fat is a mixed story. It's a complicated story. Because if you have, and I know that your machine also indicates visceral fat content. Now, that visceral fat, as you're well aware, everyone has visceral fat. You should, you have to have fat deep inside your belly. The issue is having too much of it. And if you have too much of it, then you increase your risk for the metabolic syndrome, all the bad stuff, you know, everything from diabetes to heart disease, et cetera. So it's good to, for me, I would, you know, I want to know my visceral fat numbers so that I'm making sure I don't hit some red zone that says rot row, okay? And get your little behind back and let's just clean up the eating and, you know, ramp up some aerobic exercise here because we got to drill this fat down. And as far as the rest of the fat is concerned, that's always kind of interesting, isn't it? It's fascinating because it's complex when we look at total body fat. And here's where we start talking about fat distribution. Where is that fat located? If it's mostly in your behind, in your hips and thighs, it tends to be less of a major issue in terms of any kind of metabolic consequences. If you've got a load of visceral fat, belly fat, that's not a great thing. So that needs to be addressed in a big way. And then, you know, you take total body fat and combine it with what is your lifestyle right now? How much physical activity are you getting? Are you eating clean? Blah, blah, blah. So each of those compartments is kind of interesting in that way. You know, I don't want to leave out bone. Bone really benefits from muscle. So when you're lifting your weights and you're pounding it out there, running, walking, you know, doing jogging, whatever, you know, your bones are loving every moment of it because you do not want to end up with osteoporosis if it's humanly possible. And women forget about our little friend bone. He just sort of comes along for the ride. But let's go back to the fat thing. So we see the fat compartment, and let's just say we see a fat percentage that's like 35%.
So yeah, you've loaded me up with some good stuff here. I do want to kind of get back to the nuanced picture here and why it's not easy to just look at that one number again and say, here's where I'm at, right? So you even if you saw 35%, okay, hey, that's putting me in the red. That's putting me at a number for obesity potentially. It's important because that person that you described, 180-pound female, could be very high in body fat total, or they could be very high in lean mass. So she, like at that weight level, it really could be the difference of someone who we're worried about their risk for metabolic disease, and maybe they have very high visceral fat and they have very high body fat percentage and very low muscle mass. That's someone we're going to be a lot more worried about than someone who has very high fat-free mass. Most of that is muscle. And we're looking at, you know, a mid-range or a lower body fat percentage and none of those other risks for chronic disease. So it's nuanced to take all of these things into account when we're looking at somebody's body composition, but that muscle actually peaks at, they say, age 30. And so that stockpile you mentioned is really important much before we even get to chronic disease. So to me, a big goal and a vision I have for body composition is that we're building that into all types of clinics. So it's not just in an obesity clinic once someone gets past a certain level. It's let's check this every year, right? And see how much you can stockpile of your muscle mass. And then it goes down. They also say that women's fat mass peaks at age 50 and for men that peaks at 70. So we're also talking about very different changes over those critical years. And so a lot of that does have to do with the body fat. So kind of tying that in, you're looking at this normal decline in muscle, they call it normal, age-related decline. And that is, you know, sarcopenia, as you've probably talked a lot about, you know, that low muscle mass and low function over time. That happens to all of us. What can we do to prevent that? But then also for women, you know, there's really this shift in all of a sudden that body fat is increasing, in particular from the visceral or the central abdominal area, along with that decrease in muscle mass. So these kind of two co-occurring things, both not the greatest, happening at the same time, that's really a reason to be paying attention and to figure out, like you said, how you can target that, what changes you can make exercise, physical activity wise, in addition to in the diet. And then this is where, you know, for some people, medication comes into play. If they're over a certain threshold and their risk benefit makes sense, that's where they're taking one of the anti-obesity medications. And that also can have some changes in body composition. So it's really complex. It's, I think, really important that you're working with a team that understands this and that they have all the different pieces and parts on their team. You know, you've got nutrition, you've got physical activity, and you've got behavior, because even though we know what we're should or we're supposed to do, I mean, that's where, you know, my background in psychology has really given me such a more interesting depth to that story is we all know what we're supposed to eat, right? Kind of, not everybody. In general, there's some general advice of what we know we could be doing to optimize our health. And do we all do it every day? Absolutely not. And how the difference between what we think we should be doing and what we're actually doing is really complicated and takes some hard work, some counseling, and some years and time to really get that to where you want to be. And even, you know, there's so much we could say in that area. But I do think, as you know, as far as we're talking about here, that person that comes in, your person with a higher level of body fat, we would look at their visceral fat. So we'd measure their waist circumference. I think you said 38 was the average there. There's some cutoffs in that range for women and men at 35 inches for women and 40 for men, where above that is at risk for cardiometabolic disease. So that person would be over that number. The waist circumference and the surface area also goes into that visceral adipose tissue formula, which is also one of these, you know, validated to MRI, where we're looking at the volume of fat around that midsection and what thresholds we have there for risk for, you know, chronic disease. And that number can go down nicely when you're seeing some weight loss there too. There's also, as you mentioned, someone who's carrying their weight around the bottom. I always love being able to show somebody who's got a higher weight, a higher body fat percentage, but a low waist circumference because they're carrying it down below. Love showing them their visceral adipose tissue scores, which generally are lower than you'd expect, right? They're in the red for this, they're in the red for that. But because their distribution of weight is not around their middle, they are at much lower risk and they're in a much better position going into their 40s and 50s and 60s if they have that particular body frame because it's not around the organs. The legs and the thighs and the butt are not as connected to risk. And so that's where that distribution and difference is, you know, or two people putting on pants or a dress is going to be different. They could be the same weight, they could be the same body fat percentage, but they have different dimensions and where they're carrying that fat, that can be important.
So it sounds to me like what's really needed out there are more physicians who understand how to message all of this. Because newsflash, physicians are not trained in this at all. And the entire weight sector, as it were, I mean, as well as body comp and whatever, has really evolved rapidly over the course of the last half dozen years. To that end, what did you learn at the recent obesity meetings that were held in Charleston, South Carolina?
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw, of course, we've seen such a change in the technology for body composition over the years. I mean, when I was in school for this, it was very limited what we could do. So bioimpedance has changed a lot. And so I've seen people who thought it was not so great back in the day, trying out our device and, you know, being kind of amazed at how far that's come and the specificity and the precision that we're able to offer. So I saw a lot of that in particular at this meeting. I also saw a lot of people in women's health who are really just starting to pay attention to these changes in body composition and wanting to show that to their patients and not, there's this desire not to just rely on weight, to really look at that adiposity and to look at their muscular health and to look at the visceral fat. So that's a big one. The visceral fat was a big point of discussion as they're talking about perimenopause, menopause, and even when people are on hormone therapy. I didn't know a lot about hormone therapy going into this meeting and learned a lot about how that can help, you know, regulate the hormones in females and help them with their body composition. One of the stats I thought that was interesting was that the visceral fat mass gain was about 6% across the menopause transition and then 1.5% in that postmenopause. So there's like this time in the perimenopause, menopause era where visceral fat gain is faster. So it's important that we're looking at that and how that changes during those years, what people can do, can or are they a good candidate for the hormone replacement, and then what kind of nutrition and physical activity plans they can be doing. So there was a lot of that. There was a lot on this personalized medicine approach, which again, I think is really important and not looking at social media for our metrics, not looking at what people look like and just looking at stuff that you can't see on the scale or on a picture and being able to sort of integrate that into the counseling along with some of these, you know, more specific targets for women's health.
We are more than our weight.
Absolutely.
And that's what's really key here. I was blown away. You said that the visceral fat increases by about 6% across menopause And then postmenopausally is about 1%. How interesting is that? So what that actually means is that we're in a place where, you know, we need to track what's happening with the fat that can most more likely increase our risk for cardiometabolic syndrome. And that's obviously diabetes, heart disease, et cetera. That should be a real wake-up call to people that indeed, it's not just body fat goes up, it's what body fat's going up, which I think is so important. I'm really harping on so much of this because by current estimates and predictions, what we're looking at is currently the majority of American adults are overweight. And that's been going on, honestly, since 1996. But it's been stealthily increasing. Now, what we're looking at is by the year 2030-ish, we're supposed to see potentially a changeover to the majority of adults being obese in the United States. And that could be like, you know, 50.5% or, you know, whatever that majority number looks like. That being said, I think it's all the more important to start individualizing, customizing, personalizing how you're looking at your own body over the course of the lifespan and health span, and really begin to address what's going on here. Because the trending in the United States, and this certainly isn't unique to the USA, the UK is even worse off than we are, and I could go on. We need to be addressing this. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the latest estimates, it's around 40% of people have the chronic disease of obesity. And so that is, if that continues, I think you said over majority in the next decade. I think that's absolutely where we're headed without intervention. And so one of the things that I'm super passionate about and work with the patient advocacy group, the Obesity Action Coalition, is really we're working to get more people having access to treatment and therapy for their weight or for their adiposity, their obesity. And so it's important that we start thinking about that. It's all in the media these days where you're hearing a lot about, you know, some of the newer therapies, the injectable medications, the GLP-1s. You know, there's a lot of language that's around these medications. You know, again, don't get me started on how the media has covered this, but for me, being in this field for 20 years, there was not this discussion with the greater population about size and weight and excess adiposity that there is today. So I do think there is increased attention on the problem. There are better options. So now people do have access to medications that can change that. They can, you know, that can put them in a different category so that they're not having those increased risks for all those negative health outcomes. And these treatments are, they really need to be tailored to the person. So it's not a one size fits all. It's not for somebody with a couple pounds to lose. It's for people with the chronic disease of obesity, but they're able to change that. And we also see body composition coming into that discussion because we don't know the real percentages of how much fat-free mass, lean mass, muscle mass someone's losing with the medications available. Because even with any method of weight loss, when you're losing a significant amount of your body weight, it can differ where it comes from. And so, and it can come from the fat-free mass, it can come from muscle mass. There's almost this normalized drop in muscle mass that you see when you lose a significant amount of weight, regardless of the method. We just need better outcomes to look at where is that coming from and what can we do to prevent that. But as someone loses weight, they lose some of that along with that excess body fat. And then we're seeing a totally different body composition after these treatments. And so that's, I think, what's really exciting for me is to be able to start showing people where that's coming from. And again, people think are kind of there with, hey, it's not just weight verbally, right? We're saying this, we're hearing this, but now we've got to see people actually doing the next step, which is instead of saying it's not just about weight, but only having a scale, it's not just about weight. Here's some other ways to assess that. We have body composition in our office. We can show you what that looks like. And then targeting that to that person's actual body composition with their nutrition, their physical activity, their, you know, other interventions, and being able to then show them what happens to that.
When you're out there in the hinterland, are doctors picking up on this? I mean, is there a lot of interest in this in a big way?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's interest. There's also kind of this responsibility, right? Like if you're going to prescribe something this powerful and outcomes may or may not relate to something as critical as muscle mass that we are all trying to hang on to as much as possible as we age, they're starting to pair that responsibility with purchasing something for their clinic that can actually help, you know, as almost a safety mechanism, right?
This is also a very important point. I think a lot of that interest is basically based upon the fact that there is now medication. And with medication, I mean, it'd be sort of like handing out high blood pressure medicine, but not having a blood pressure cuff in the office. It's like, well, okay, you know, here's your 10 milligrams of good luck. I mean, I guess it's okay. Who the hell knows? I'm kind of happy about the fact that, well, first of all, in 2013, the American Medical Association actually declared that obesity is a chronic disease. So we need to, you know, drop all this craziness about the fact that, you know, there's something wrong with you, undisciplined, whatever. You know, come on now. We live in an obesogenic environment. We're not making it easy for people at all. We've got crap for food out there. I don't even call it food.
And the majority are affected, right? That's what I find so strange, that there can be such weight bias out there, but the majority of us have that disease. So at some point, there's got to be a flip to say, oh, wait, we're all in this together and we all kind of need help.
You're the psychologist, and I just read a mountain of psychological studies on that very subject, because I was fascinated with, and I always have been as a physician, with the fact that there seems to be, I don't know if I could use the word denial, but just a lack of awareness of what you're all about. So many people will describe themselves differently. So women, for instance, are very famous for just saying, I'm a little overweight. I'm a little heavy, when in essence, they may have an extra 75 to 100 pounds on board, which is not a little heavy. That is an individual with obesity. With men, they just say, I'm a big guy, you know, and they write it off. And you're like, well, wait a minute. you know, and if you do the body comp, you'll say, whoa, the visceral fat's up big time. The muscle mass. Now, here's the other thing about muscle mass, which I think is extremely important. You may have a certain amount of muscle mass. And, you know, it's really interesting. For a long time, there's been this little kind of rumor that heavier men and women have really strong bones and they've got a lot of muscle, you know, because they have to have a lot of muscle to be able to hold up the extra weight. Well, yes, they definitely have a higher level of muscle. That's already been established in published literature. No question about that. But the quality of the muscle and the quality of the bone is different. You have fatty infiltration of muscle and fatty infiltration of bone. If you could think of it as like marbling, we've seen, you know, steak with marble in it, you know, fat in it and all the rest of it. That's kind of what you're looking at. And so once again, we're going for the quality of your body parts under the hood versus just, you know, gross quantities. And so the other thing we found is that if you're on a GLP-1, Ozempic, you know, all of those, Wegovy and back and forth, I'm looking at these medications as beta. This is the first wave of these kind of medications. And in the pipeline, we already know this from many of the recent obesity meetings. In the pipeline, we've got plenty more coming where that came from, using also different categories of drug. But we've also found that you can't just do these medications without exercise and without addressing your clean eating, in addition to which these medications have been tied to a much higher reduction in muscle mass than normally expected. what is normally expected is about 25% reduction in muscle mass, which makes sense because you don't need the extra muscle if you don't have the extra weight. So it's like walking around with a heavy vest on that you don't need anymore. You take that thing off. But with the GLP-1s, what has been recorded is 40% instead of 25%. That's way too much muscle mass loss. And so I know that Novo Nordisk as well as Lilly have both been associated with brand new drugs in the pipeline that are going through testing that address the issue of muscle mass as well. So that's kind of where that goes. So I'm just really excited by all of this. And I'm hoping that basically healthcare providers, not just physicians, but healthcare providers out there are getting the message that one of the things that we need more than anything else is an awareness of the quality of the body instead of just the quantity of the body. Does that make sense to you, Nina?
Totally. And I do want to say, you know, one of the things that I think is super important in those stats that you gave is that the 25 to 40%, we don't exactly know. That's not just muscle mass. So the way that they've done this study, if they're looking at lean body mass, remember that's the DEXA-derived lean body mass, which is taking out fat and taking out bone, that's going to be a much higher number than someone's actual muscle mass. So we are encouraging, you know, future clinical trials to include use of body composition through bioimpedance, where we could do that in a bigger group of patients, not just that 140 person subset, but in a bigger group of patients looking at actual muscle, because it would be much lower than that. So those percentages are talking about lean body mass. The muscle, we don't know because DEXA can't tell you exactly that skeletal muscle mass. So that's a big point there. But yeah, it's kind of back to that comprehensive care team taking that individual patient, because the first part of what you said, most patients, you know, the normal body type for someone who's heavier would be that they have more muscle, that they have more fat. Both of those things contribute to their weight. But when you're able to look at body composition, you'll find a subset of people whose muscle is not higher. It is low. So that's a patient that you're going to treat very differently. You're going to be much more careful with their medication and with their diet and exercise than you would with someone who is just kind of in the normal or in the higher level for that. And that's where this really individualized therapy is important.
And those kind of people who are heavy, but have a lower amount of muscle mass, those kind of people oftentimes are your chronic yo-yoers. And what will happen is you drop some fat, you drop a lot of muscle, and then when you gain the weight back, you're not gaining muscle, very little. And so you just keep accruing more and more body fat percentage over time. All right. So as we just kind of pull this together, give us one just golden nugget, just briefly, something that you consider to be important for a woman sitting out there on the Her Podcast land who just really wants to be able to have hope about all of this.
Oh, you know, I'm way too nuanced for one nugget, but I would say, you know, getting a measurement and getting some data around your body composition is going to be able to help that person target their next steps, because we don't know if that person should be doing all that cardiovascular. If they're going to be doing some exercise, maybe that person needs to spend some time lifting weights instead. We don't know that they need to be so focused or not focused on their protein intake, and that's going to really depend on where they are to start. And I think it really will give someone that psychological component around it's more than just your weight. How can we look at some of your individual measurements to help you get started improving them or optimizing them as you age through the lifespan?
Absolutely. I think that this is fantastic. You have been just a fount of knowledge, Nina Crowley, who is absolutely an expert in all things body composition. And I'm so glad you're out there with your very hybrid background so that you could really kind of play between psychology as well as physiology, nutrition, and fitness. This is also excellent. And I think it really needs to be heard. And people out there on the Herb Podcast land, you're going to be hearing a lot more about this issue in the future. That to me is an absolute guarantee. So, Nina, thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast. And I got to say, everyone, hop on over to iTunes right now to rate and review this absolutely terrific episode. I hope you've gotten super enlightened. And a major shout out to our sponsor again, Solaray Vitamins, which are vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. Check out the Her Life Stages products that will cover you all the way from the menstrual years through postmenopause. Run on over to your local health food store to check it out, or go to solaray.com to learn more. Oh man, this has been another amazing Herb Podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peake, your host. And I want to thank every single one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Herb Podcast community. Pop on over to drpeake.com to learn more about my work and social media. Join me every single week for another Herb Podcast, where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Nina Crowley today, as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Thanks so much. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. A little carpe diem. Have a great one.